Obsession is a complex and formidable topic. It renders you powerless, consumed, and in some minds, it becomes increasingly dangerous. It distorts your sense of reality and leads to poor decisions. It gnaws at you relentlessly, driving a constant need for gratification. There is no such thing as a healthy obsession. The term itself implies negativity. It's alarming that we can either be victims of our own obsessions or the focus of someone else's. Sometimes all it takes is smiling at the wrong person to become the object of someone's fixation. Their obsession starts out minuscule and then escalates rapidly and unchecked, only worsening over time. In this episode of Still Unsolved, Dorothy Scott found herself trapped in someone's obsession, and she lost her life because of it. In the early 1980s, Dorothy Jane Scott was a single mother living in Stanton, California. She lived with her aunt and four-year-old son, Sean. She worked as a secretary for two jointly owned stores in Anaheim. One store sold psychedelic accessories like tapestries and lava lamps, while the other was a head shop selling paraphernalia related to tobacco and cannabis. Dorothy's friends and co-workers described her as a homebody and a devout Christian who neither drank nor did drugs, despite her employment at the shops. The only reason she worked at those shops was due to her father. He previously owned the stores and brought her on as a back office employee. Dorothy had a healthy relationship with her parents, who babysat Sean every day. As a single mother, she worked hard to provide for her son. Sean's father was entirely absent, having relocated to Missouri to start a new family. Dorothy's dating life was casual and sporadic. Her family mentioned that although she dated occasionally, there was no steady boyfriend they knew of. In summary, Dorothy led a simple, consistent, and beautiful life, full of love. But is anything truly simple? We all have our demons and battles we prefer to keep hidden. In Dorothy's case, she kept her battles hidden for the sake of her family. Sadly, fighting that battle alone would prove fatal, because behind the scenes, Dorothy had become the object of someone's obsession. Dorothy's battle came in the form of phone harassment. She received anonymous calls, both at work and at home, where Sean and her aunt also lived. After a few incidents, Dorothy confided in her mother, Vera, about the calls. Although she couldn't identify the male voice on the other end, she felt it was familiar, as if she almost knew who it was. Dorothy was certain she recognized the voice, but couldn't match it to a name. The nature of the calls varied. Sometimes the caller professed his love for Dorothy, making advances and declaring his devotion. Other times he was hostile and threatening. He admitted to stalking her, providing accurate and intimate details of her day to prove it. He made it a point to describe what she was wearing while on the phone with her. One time, the caller instructed Dorothy to go outside because he had something for her. For reasons unclear, Dorothy complied. She went outside to find a single dead rose carefully placed on the windshield of her car. The calls grew increasingly aggressive. In his most chilling call, the harasser told Dorothy that he would get her alone and cut her into pieces so no one would ever find her. Horrified, Dorothy began discussing the possibility of buying a handgun with her family. However, Vera opposed the idea, especially with Sean being so young and curious. Dorothy conceded but started taking karate lessons for peace of mind. Despite the family being aware of the harassment and the severity of the threats, no one was quite sure how to handle the situation. Consequently, they left it unreported, and life continued on for a while longer. On the night of May 28, 1980, Dorothy dropped Sean off at her parents' house in Anaheim so she could attend a nighttime staff meeting at the shop. During the meeting, a little past 9 p.m., she noticed that her co-worker, Conrad Bostrin, didn't look well and had a noticeable red mark on his arm. Concerned, she offered to take him to the hospital. Conrad accepted, and another co-worker, Pamela Head, volunteered to help, knowing Dorothy would need assistance getting Conrad to and from the car. They loaded Conrad into the car and headed toward the hospital. However, instead of taking him straight there, Dorothy first stopped at her parents' house. She wanted to check in on Sean and let them know she would be home later than anticipated. Pam thought it would have been better to call from the hospital, but Dorothy insisted the stop would be quick. When Dorothy returned to the car, Pam noticed that she had switched out her black scarf for a red one. In hindsight, it was a bizarre fashion change, given the circumstances. But with that done, they continued on their way to get Conrad the help he needed. The doctors diagnosed Conrad with a black widow bite. While he was being treated, Dorothy and Pam waited in the lobby of the UC Irvine Medical Center. Pam noted that Dorothy never left her side during this time. At around 11 p.m., Conrad was finally released. As he picked up his prescription, Dorothy went to the restroom and then headed out to the parking lot to grab her car and pick up the others at the front door. Conrad and Pam waited, expecting Dorothy's car to pull up any moment. However, after a few minutes with no sign of her, they assumed there was some miscommunication or perhaps a problem with the car. Deciding to check on her, they headed into the parking lot. As they walked out, they saw Dorothy's white Toyota station wagon speeding past them. The headlights were so bright that they couldn't see Dorothy or whoever was behind the wheel. Naturally, Conrad and Pam initially assumed that some emergency must have come up with Sean. They decided to wait for Dorothy to return. However, hours passed without any word from her, prompting them to finally report her missing. When they contacted the police, their call was dismissed. The police advised them to take a cab home, reassuring them that Dorothy was probably fine. The following morning, an ominous discovery was made at around 4:30 a.m. While on their routine patrol, police came across a white Toyota station wagon. They were able to quickly confirm that it was Dorothy's. The car was found in an alley about 10 miles from the hospital in Santa Ana. Dorothy was nowhere to be found, and any hope for further leads vanished as the car was already engulfed in flames. Just a week later, her mother received a chilling phone call. This eerie exchange would be the first call of many more to come. The caller asked, "Are you related to Dorothy Scott?" When Vera replied yes, the man said, "I've got her." He then ended the call abruptly. Every Wednesday afternoon, the same voice called. Sometimes he asked if Dorothy was home. Other times he claimed to have her, and occasionally he said he had killed her. These calls were usually brief and always occurred when Vera was home alone. This suggested that, whoever the caller was, he was keeping a close watch on Dorothy's parents. Police installed a voice recorder on their phone to trace the calls, but they were never able to identify the caller. He was clever, never staying on the line long enough for the software to trace him. Dorothy's father, Jacob, wanted to get the media involved. However, the police advised them to do nothing. They argued that press attention would hinder the investigation. Jacob pleaded with them to at least release the audio so someone might recognize the voice, but the police refused. To the family's dismay, the calls continued. Every week, Vera was taunted and harassed by the anonymous caller, the deranged man who claimed to have taken her child and Sean's devoted mother. And sadly, the nightmare was far from over.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM Sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Jacob couldn't stand by and let this continue. He believed the police were wrong to keep this case under wraps, likely trying to protect their own reputations after failing to follow up on the initial missing person call. Determined to take action, he went to the Santa Ana Register with a story about his missing daughter. The paper agreed to offer a $2,500 reward for any information regarding her whereabouts, dead or alive. The story ran on June 12, 1980. By this time, the nightmare had been unfolding for a full 6 months since the beginning of the year. Finally, things started to move quickly. On the same day the story was published, the paper's editor, Pat Riley, received an anonymous phone call from a man claiming to be Dorothy Scott's killer. "She was my love," he said. "I caught her cheating with another man. She denied having someone else, so I killed her." The caller even mentioned details that only someone close to the events would know. He knew about Conrad Bostrom's spider bite on the night of May 28th. He also knew that Dorothy had been wearing a red scarf and that she had changed from a black scarf to a red one after the employee meeting. Both of these details had not been published in the June 12th article. The caller claimed that Dorothy had called him from the hospital that night. Pam disputed this, insisting she had been with Dorothy the entire time and that Dorothy had not made any phone calls. However, Dorothy did go to the restroom alone while Pam and Conrad picked up the prescription. Investigators agreed that the specific details the caller provided made it likely that he was indeed Dorothy's kidnapper, or at the very least, he was someone who knew Dorothy well enough to have obtained details from that night. Unfortunately, they had no leads to follow from there. They hadn't anticipated the need to trace the Santa Ana Register's phone line, leaving them once again at a dead end. For 4 years, the calls continued almost every Wednesday, until April of 1984. On one Wednesday, when the phone rang later than usual, Jacob answered. As soon as Jacob spoke, the caller immediately hung up. It was as if he knew that. Unlike Vera, Jacob might recognize his voice. After that, the calls stopped entirely. They waited by the phone the following Wednesday, expecting the call as usual, but the telephone was silent. For a moment, the family was finally able to experience some peace. Unfortunately, that peace would be disrupted by a grim discovery. The family was finally going to get answers. Those answers would come with a devastating revelation. Nearly 2 months later, on August 6, 1984, construction workers discovered piles of burnt bones about 30 feet from Santa Ana Canyon Road. This was approximately 13 miles from the hospital where Dorothy was last seen. Among the remains were both human and dog bones, side by side. It seemed they had been there for a long time, and a 1982 brush fire might explain their charred condition. A turquoise ring and a watch were found with the remains. The watch had stopped at 12:30 a.m. on May 29, 1980. This was about an hour after Conrad and Pam last saw Dorothy and her vehicle. While the police couldn't determine the cause of death solely from the bones, they were able to use dental records to officially identify the remains as those of Dorothy Jane Scott. She had her memorial service 8 days later, on August 22nd. 4 months after the calls had stopped, the discovery of Dorothy's bones seemed to agitate the caller, and the calls began again. While Jacob and Vera were at a mortuary making funeral arrangements for their daughter, the man called the family home twice. Their son Alan answered, and the voice on the other end asked, "Is Dorothy home?" This was the last straw. Now that the family finally had closure and no longer needed to hope the caller might let them speak to Dorothy, the Scotts decided to change their phone number. They had endured 4 years of torment, most of which had occurred after Dorothy was already gone. After Dorothy's disappearance, her son Sean was raised by his grandparents, Jacob and Vera. They both passed away, Jacob in 1994 and Vera in 2002, never discovering the identity of the person who tormented them for so many years. However, Sean remains dedicated to uncovering the truth. He firmly believes that a man named Mike Butler was the one who kidnapped and killed his mother. Interestingly, Mike Butler was the only man to ever make it onto the police radar. For a short time, he owned Custom John's head shop, where Dorothy worked in the back room. He became obsessed with Dorothy, lived alone in the Santiago Mountains, and was rumored to be generally unstable. The primary reason for this theory is that, while Mike no longer worked at the shop, his sister still did. In fact, she worked closely with Dorothy, which could have given him insight into her schedule or whereabouts. Butler also knew Jacob Scott. If he was the killer, it would explain why he panicked when Jacob picked up the phone that one Wednesday night. Jacob would likely have recognized the voice of the man who had taken over his shop. Frustratingly, Butler passed away in 2014, so we may never know for sure. Over 40 years have passed since the abduction and murder of Dorothy Jane Scott. Witnesses, suspects, and others with potential information have either moved away or passed on. The chances of bringing someone to justice in this case are close to zero. And I hate to say it, but this is just one case of obsession out of far too many. Pure evil exists in the world, and some people just seem to thrive on others' misery and grief. Dorothy's killer, whoever it was one of those people. He was a deranged man whose interest turned into an obsession that became deadly. He got his fix every single week, and even after Dorothy's death, the caller continued to get their thrill. That's what's terrifying about obsession. It sees no end. Dorothy had to endure a life of constantly looking over her shoulder. Even after the tragic death of the young mother, the obsession with tormenting her family persisted up until they were no longer alive. And now, we are all tormented with a mystery that remains still unsolved.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM Sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.